Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Texter at 1070-10 writes, "It makes me curious as to how blindly people on the left are when they claim that you're always siding with the right." Yeah, that's actually a good point. You know, one of the ridiculous narratives that friends of City Hall have put out in the past when I catch them doing something that they're not supposed to be doing is they say, "Oh, he attacks us because we're progressive." No, I attack them because they're doing things they shouldn't be doing, and it's harming this community. And it's all true, and it's all real, and they deserve absolutely every bit of criticism they've gotten across the street and more. And you, the people, need to hold them to account when, if I should say, any of them actually seek re-election this fall. October 15th, 2022. It doesn't matter if it's left and right. It's about right and wrong. It's about true and false is what this show is about. The left tends to have a lot of power around here, so it tends to often be scrutinizing the left, but it's not exclusively the left, and it never has been. And they knew that across the street. They all do. Everybody does. It was just a narrative that they built to try to discredit me. Of course, it didn't work because we proved it all in the end, but, you know, just pointing that out. Cherry picker all day long, a texter writes, "I think you don't discuss both sides because you don't see or not aware of both sides. It's blatant. Your show has become a small pond echo chamber for our Left Coast community." Texter, then how do I make all these accurate predictions? Is it true that I don't linger on things that are obviously lies? Yeah, it is. Why would I elevate something that I am 99% sure is a lie and make you think that it might be real? Why would I do that? Like, I don't think that serves you particularly well. You can make up an infinite number of false things, and if I tell you all the false things as well as the one thing that's right, you're probably not even going to notice the thing that's right. You know, it's a tactic to confound the media. It's a political tactic. You say, "You're not saying both sides." What they do is they make up fake sides, and then they attack the media because we don't actually say this side is fake. We just don't mention it. See, it's a courtesy thing. At least that's what has happened in some instances in the past. And yeah, I don't know. I guess I can go through and debunk all this stuff. But if I see something that's just laughable, unless somebody asks me about it and asks me my opinion on it, sometimes I'll just, you know, avoid it altogether because I think it's a speed bump designed to slow us down on our, excuse me, ultimate pursuit for truth. All right. Let's see. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's one other thing that I wanted to talk about. And this is, of course, the Coastal GasLink pipeline. Now, there's video that has been released. It's on the other side of the spectrum, too. The left has been doing this. There was some sort of a ridiculous attack at a work camp connected to the Coastal GasLink pipeline, and the images that surfaced were shocking. You know what happened when that happened? It's exactly the same thing that happened with the convoy on the right. All of these pro-environmental type folks, especially on social media here in BC, started saying that it didn't happen, or maybe it was a false flag, or maybe they're making it up. There's no way you could actually have people armed with axes do these things. Nobody else saw anything. It's sowing all of this doubt because it's possible the attack came from the other side. We don't know who it was, but police are looking for your help, and they've posted video online. Here's what it sounded like.
RCMP are releasing new details about the violent attack at the Coastal GasLink camp near Houston. RCMP released new...
See, if you're against this, but you're not against the convoy because one's on the left, one's on the right, you're part of the problem, if you'll pardon me suggesting that. And it's true because both sides compete with each other. The left says, "Well, the right did this and got away with it, so we're going to do it too." And then the other side says, "Well, they got away with it. We're going to do it too." And that's exactly what's been happening in Ottawa. Anybody who criticizes the convoy, the first thing you get as a retort is, "You didn't say that about all the blockades of rail lines and all that other stuff." Well, I did, actually. I condemned all of it. But the problem is each side always thinks that they're being treated unfairly.
New surveillance video tonight. They want the public to take a very close look at it, hoping someone out there knows something. The first video shows the attackers approaching a work vehicle armed with axes. In the next
And it shows the axes. Bunch of people said it didn't happen. Bunch of people suggested it was fake or made up. They're looking pretty silly now.
In the next video, they do the same to a pickup. The truck goes backs up, then goes forward. And in a third video, they go to the window aiming strobe lights at the driver, then spray paint.
They've got strobe lights, and you actually see it in the video to like because it's the middle of the night, right? So the driver can't really see what's happening, and they're spray painting the truck as this is happening.
They go to the window aiming strobe lights at the driver, then spray paint the passenger side window before setting off flares.
See, this is the convoy's fault. They created the precedent where we could commit crimes and it was okay, and that was part of peaceful protest. Of course somebody's going to do a copycat, in my view. People say, "Adam, what if it was a false flag?" Well, that would also be triggered by the convoy. You see, it's the precedent that matters. What will people do with the precedent that gets created by this particular protest? Oh, and the blockades shutting down highways and whatnot for old growth and the nonsense out there at Ferry Creek, that absolutely helped establish the precedent for the convoy. Both sides are guilty here because both sides keep making incursions.
RCMP are asking if you recognize anyone in the videos to call it in.
Regardless of who it was, we do need to bring them to justice, just like we need to bring the convoy folks to justice, just like we need to bring those to justice who broke the law up at Ferry Creek. It's an arms race. They go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and it escalates and it escalates and it escalates, and eventually we get to the point where we have middle-of-the-night armed incursions with axes going after work camps. It's all unacceptable, all of it. And it feeds off each other. They all watch each other because they all see the same news that we do. Oh, and I wish other people could see this stuff. But sometimes we can't because we don't like to see it on our own side. Let's go to Kevin. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Good. So we're allowed to have our own theories?
Well, I don't know, Kevin. So, yours are stupid sometimes. I'll hang up on you if you annoy me, but you can try. See, because when you take that tone where it's
okay,
like, oh,
so the show is not about anything. It's about
Kevin.
Me,
it's
me,
not
me,
a,
me. I.
That's no, I, Kevin. I get complaints.
Can
that
I
you,
have a theory,
Kevin? I get complaints from people saying Kevin
then
wastes
hang
our time.
Up on
he
me
just
then.
Okay. See you later. I don't like your tone some days, Kevin. I just don't. And you think you're in this position where you can browbeat people and berate people, and I get complaints about it, and I usually just ignore it, and I let you back on again and again and again and again. You get more time than, like, any other 50 people out there, and all you do is complain about it. Anyway, let's go to Don. Hey, Don, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Adam. I think to back up the cart, so to speak, for Canada, I highly doubt any of this would have happened if Trudeau didn't...
You're right.
These mandates.
Yeah, you're right. He was definitely part of inflaming this, certainly. Yeah.
And so I've been searching as to why, and really I can't give any answers on that. I can't understand it. I think your guest too, Alice Ross, he stated it well when he said that the lack of enforcement and the watering down of laws by the left has laid the foundation of this lawlessness. I think I'm in that team. I do think there's some substance with that. I'm not going to blame the left, because the left serves, what would you say, serves the country, as does the right. It's the blending of the two theories that I've always cherished. I'm not an extreme left. I'm not an extreme right. And I think I'm in the majority. Most Canadians are in the middle.
Yeah.
One thing that your show hasn't covered, though, is the reputation of Canada, how it's been damaged. It really breaks my heart. I spend as much time out of Canada as I do in Canada. And I'm not in Canada right now, Adam. But with that, I get so many of my friends coming up to me, basically scolding me, and I can't use their language on your show.
No.
That's how upset they are with what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
That I blame, what would you say, both sides. I think the truckers' convoy, whatever you want to call it, they needed better leadership. I think politically, Trudeau, he needs to be a better leader if we want to maintain the scraps that are left over of Canada's reputation. Canada and the worldwide, I never saw them, you know, as a big player. We were basically the nice guys. We would go and keep peace.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't instigators. We were more, let's get along. And Canada was a dream of that, with all their immigration, with democracy, the socialism, you know, like with our medicine. You know, we cared for each other. We loved each other. We accepted each other. And that's all gone. And that is totally all gone. Fox, you know, it's guilty of perpetuating that. I just feel sickened that Canada had basically, I'm tempted to say it, they had it all. We had it all, and we're blowing it. Mm-hmm. And I can't for the life of me understand the end game on this one. Mm-hmm. So I just think that... I guess I don't know what to say, Adam.
And that's okay. Like, I don't... I don't know either,
I'm just
honestly.
Heartbroken.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just heartbroken that Canada... I used to be so proud, you know, to say... You know, they'd ask me, where was I from?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Don. I really am.
Because...
Yeah.
I better go.
I'm sorry, Don. Well, listen, we're going to fix this. We'll make sure it's okay. We'll make sure that justice is done, and if any folks have been treated unfairly, we'll make sure that they're made whole again. We're not gonna actually go into tyranny, and if folks around the world are thinking we're doing that, we're going to prove them wrong by being good, all right?
It's kind of like this. It's like when you're in a broken marriage and there's kids involved, and you've got the two grown adults that are supposed to be mature.
Yeah, I know.
And they forget the kids.
I'm sorry, Don. I really am.
Okay.
All right. You have a good day. You take care. I feel that emotion. I'm feeling that too myself. Like, I'm looking at all these folks around the world thinking that we're this tyranny, and I want to show that we're not. I want to show that it's not as bad as it's being made to look. That's not to say it's perfect, though. People are saying Trudeau said that because he knew it would inflame the Well, he probably knew what they were going to do. We all did. I did. You know, I was telling people who were pro-convoy that this was a trap, like when we first had that protest at the legislature. Remember I did that tweet. I said, take away their CERB payments, because it was like, I'm like, we need to denounce this because it's going to be a disaster. It's not going to end the way everybody thinks that it ends, at least not locally. And we all lose. And I've also been saying that the whole time, too. I've been saying nobody wins from this. There is no winner. And you can hear the emotion in Don's voice. There is no winner from this. This whole thing was a disaster. Now, you can say, well, it's the mandates that force the convoy. Well, a lot of folks out there dealt with the mandates without forming the convoy that was part of the chain of events that is slowly but surely making us look like a disaster on the world stage. You know, did Russia help incent all this? I think it's entirely likely. We all did what we did, and it was domino after domino after domino. You can say, but Adam, what about this domino? Yeah, that one played a part. But we are where we are. I'm not quite sure how to get out of it. Somebody says, stop defending Trudeau. I just said that he was part of this. See, that's the other problem, is it's never good enough. You always get accused of being on one side or the other side regardless. Anyway, quick break. More after this.
This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Oh, I do have an update as of, I think it was 9 or 10 minutes ago. CTV News now reporting that Tamara Leach's lawyer has advised them that they're putting together a review application for her bail status. So maybe she'll get released on bail after all, pending some sort of appeal to the court. And again, that's entirely possible. I assume it'll be heard by another judge, which, again, is a healthy way for the legal system and the justice system to operate. But I still hold to my view that we should not be shocked and surprised that she ended up being held behind bars, because she knew it. And she told us the day before that she would be, because she was saying goodbye to her friends and her followers. Why is that? I think it's because she knew. Well, obviously, she knows what she did. The justice system may know more than we have found out about, and that may be why she was held behind bars. But we'll find out. See, that's the other thing in our legal system in terms of what we can trust, is everything gets reviewed. And it's usually a different decision maker who reviews the first decision maker's decision in order for us to have public confidence within it. But I feel really bad hearing Don despair over the state of our country's reputation from all this. And you know what I keep going back to, and we forgot, like when we keep getting away from this, and I don't know why, is that we're talking about a disease that kills people, COVID-19. And it's been so whipped into something completely different about just, oh, no, I have rights. No, you don't. You don't have rights to spread a disease. You never have. Rights have always been curtailed in times of illness. It's just, this is the first modern pandemic in the modern era that we've seen happen over the internet in our country. It's never happened before with social media. It's entirely possible the previous pandemics would have had all the same things happening in terms of people's reactions and perceptions. Just we didn't know because we didn't have the internet in those days. Things have changed because the world as we view it has changed. The way we communicate has changed. The way we perceive things has changed. Why wouldn't this pandemic look different than the others? And at the end of the day, the truckers know that they're wrong. They know they're making stuff up. Why do I believe that? Why is that my belief? Do you know what Pat King's lawyer argued yesterday against holding his client in custody? Among other things, Pat King's lawyer argued that it would be dangerous to hold his client in jail because there's a higher likelihood that he'll catch COVID-19 there than if he was with his surety back in Alberta. So the truckers are literally relying on the COVID protocols that they were protesting and demanding to have removed immediately to try to stay out of jail. Is that something someone does when they believe their story? I don't think so. That's something a theatrical performer does after the curtain goes down afterwards, when they are in a little bit of trouble and the time has come to tell the truth, in my view. At least I have a strong suspicion that is the case. But think about that. The truckers demanded all COVID mandates removed. That would include the provisions that make it harder to put somebody in jail, wouldn't it? And his lawyer was citing COVID-19 and the danger of COVID-19 as one of the reasons that he should not be held behind bars, because they know it's real, because he's advocating for his client's safety, as all lawyers should. The difference is one of those things was politics and theater, and in the courtroom, it was real life. Why would he be scared of COVID if he was legitimate and sincere in his view that there should be no protections for COVID? That doesn't make sense. Just something to think about. I was just about to go to Dev, but he disappeared. Sorry about that, Dev. I've got another caller on the board, though. It's Barbara. Hey, Barbara, how you doing?
Well, my dear Adam, I have to give you some information about this. I'm a fourth-generation Victorian.
Yeah.
And there's a wonderful... he's an investigative reporter, Rex Murphy. Have you heard of him? And he is one of our most wonderful
Rex,
investigative reporters across Canada.
Rex and Murphy is one of the most famous commentators in all of Canada. Barbara, of course, yes, I've heard of Rex Murphy.
Well, you can let me tell you, because Jordan B. Pearson is he's interviewed Rex Murphy.
Yeah.
And you can, and anybody who wants to know what these wonderful salt of the earth truckers were doing on behalf of all of us, is it's called The Catastrophe of Canada. Rex Murphy has gone through the whole thing, and God bless him and God bless those people. And it's not just about the vaxxers, it's much more. Now, the next thing I would like to say to you, and it's very, very simple and it's humorous, is people to look up on YouTube, Sham Sharma, S-H-A-M-S-H-A-R-M-A.
Who's that?
And you just look it up, and you will find Jagmeet Singh and Justin Trudeau meltdown. And it's the truth about what they're doing.
What do you
they're
think they're
interfering
doing?
In India.
In
all
India?
Over again. And you know why I'm worried about that?
Why?
Because the last time Pierre Trudeau got himself fiddling around with certain people, there's one editor
in
the family over in the mainland. First of all, he was assassinated. Before that, he was an assassination attempt. He was paralyzed. Then they got him and they assassinated him. And this is because...
Who's they?
We had Trudeau's dingbat, Pierre Trudeau's dingbat policies, had people in here. You had the Air India. You had this poor man. His family are very frustrated. After 20 years, they haven't found that murderer. This was a good man from India and an editor. And you know, you really are... whatever you're supposed to be doing there, I don't know. But and then one more thing.
Well, I'm always willing to look at a different opinion, Barbara.
I don't want to even be on here. Because but I have
Why
to
not?
Be. Because I think truth is necessary. Eventually.
Okay, about the...
I was nursing in America during the time of Eisenhower.
Eisenhower. Okay.
You know Eisenhower. He was one of the main generals for ending the Second World War.
Yes.
He was president.
Mm-hmm.
When in his farewell speech to the American people, when he realized who was making money out of these wars, was beware of the military-industrial complex. Mm. Now, that's just a bit of history to bring you to who this Tracy Gabbard, no, Tulsi Gabbard, who you keep knocking about.
I don't think
Tucker.
I've ever mentioned that name.
No, you haven't, but Tucker Carlson had her on.
Yeah.
She was an American Democrat.
What?
member to Congress. She was also a military.
Yeah.
And she, Tucker Carlson has her on, and you look her up. And she is an amazing woman, and she tried to get the truth out once more because she said these wars, as Eisenhower said, are caused by the elite of both parties.
Mm.
And people can find her on, guess what, Fox News, because they interview the people with truth.
Well, they're the single
also,
biggest corporate news channel on earth, so I would fully expect them to have those resources. Barbara, I need to take a break for our newscast, but I want to say thank you for calling, okay?
Oh, just mention one more thing.
Quickly?
If I may. And it was Eisenhower who brought in Colin Powell because he was another good man.
All right.
So there you got it.
All right, Barbara, thank you so much for the recommendation to review information on what you believe is really happening. I appreciate it. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll go to the news now.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
BC unveiled its newest provincial budget yesterday, providing billions of dollars in new funding for fire and flood prevention and recovery in the budget that projects a $5.5 billion deficit, earmarking $2.1 billion for a program to pay for disaster recovery efforts and future response to threats from wildfires. Meanwhile, reaction to the budget pointing out what is not there. BC Liberal Party saying the provincial budget doesn't do enough to cut the cost of living. Liberal finance critic Peter Millibar was on with our own Al Farabee earlier today saying that budget completely misses the mark and that more is necessary to help families.
Which is not for services, not providing treatment beds or help for people. It's for communication staff. So again, it's about...
That was Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions.
You know, I guess we'll believe it when we see it. But to this point, their child care program has been non-existent in terms of expansion. Their housing initiatives, we only have 5,000 units in 5 years now that have actually got people living in them out of 114,000 that they pledged 5 years ago. So, you know, it's really disappointing to see the same things get trotted out 6 budgets in a row.
You know, when you put it that way, one can't help but feel at least a small measure of disappointment. But what about the powerhouse of our economy? What about businesses and what they need in order to kickstart our economy back to full speed as we, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully, finally emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic? Here to talk more about that perspective, we're joined by Greg Davignon, President and CEO, Business Council of BC. Good morning. Thank you for your time.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Want to get your thoughts on what we saw and did not see in yesterday's provincial budget.
Well, thanks. The budget followed the government's release late last week of their economic plan. And they laid out in the plan, but also in the budget yesterday, a vision, as you know, and your viewers or listeners, pardon me, know, about building a more inclusive, innovative, sustainable and clean economy and society. And we are completely supportive of the Business Council, which is the 260 largest and leading firms in every sector of the economy around that vision. The problem is it's missing any action. You know, I want to give Minister Callon of the government credit for focusing on agri-food and agri-tech, which is a growing and exciting opportunity where we've got demonstrable global strengths, including in life sciences as well, in that plan. But yesterday's budget was a missed opportunity to improve British Columbian standard of living during the 3-year term of this plan. And it neglects key actions, as I said, to support real sustainable economic growth that builds on the province's strengths. You know, we're at a real pivotal point after 2 very difficult years, both economically and socially. We're seeing it in the news everywhere, and we're seeing it globally today in the Ukraine. And the government continues to increase spending while taking for granted the sources of recent economic growth, much of which happened completely out of their control. Surging natural resource exports of 36%, rebounding consumer spending in the retail space, and buoyant housing markets, and there isn't a solid plan for where economic growth is going to come from in the medium term. And the problem is we're in an increasingly competitive and complex world where many other jurisdictions have moved on and are stepping up their efforts to act to attract productive private sector investment. And BC, frankly, is lagging and does not have the hosting conditions to attract that investment And therefore, the vision starts to fall apart in the medium term if we don't start to take those actions. And you know who pays the price for that is future generations that are going to bear the cost of that inaction.
Absolutely. All of us do. We need to be able to attract investment. That's just how the world works. So you and I understand that. And if there's anybody out there that hasn't had that properly made clear to them, then I'm more than willing to help rectify that issue. I want to ask you about foreign investment. We've seen, as you mentioned, unrest. And it's not just about COVID protocols either. There's this really concerning incident that targeted an investment work site, Coastal GasLink Pipeline in Houston, B.C. RCMP, they're looking for help. Everybody's denounced it. But the world's going to see that, too. And they're going to ask, will Canada maintain rule of law if we decide to invest a huge amount of money in developing a project? What do you think?
Well, economists call that the hosting conditions for capital. But what it really means is, like any investor, you're investing in an RRSP or you're investing in a business. What's the return I'm going to get on the investment I make, and what's the risk of that return based on all the things I can't control? And Canada generally, and BC specifically, have high risk on our hosting conditions. The taxes on a cumulative basis, what are called the marginal effective tax rate, are double in British Columbia what they are in the rest of the country.
Wow.
We're seeing in Canada a net outflow of private sector capital. We're not even replacing the capital that we have in place today. So when we want to build a more productive and innovative economy, yeah, where it matters for the average person is a measure called GDP per capita. So are, you know, we're growing the pie, but are we growing the individual slice of the pie for people? Hmm. And the answer is no. We used to have that adage, yeah, up until the early 2000s, that you would be better off than your parents because GDP per capita doubled every 30 years. Today, it's going to double every four generations. So wow, young people, I've got children in their 20s, it's their grandchildren that are going to be better off than me. And so the challenge we've got is that's a direct link on work we've done to wages. So we talk about affordability, but we rarely talk about the denominator of how do we improve wages and grow them so that people have the opportunity to have a higher quality of standard of living. And that's directly related to the conditions for investment. We've got a far too complex and far too costly and uncertain regulatory environment across the economy.
Yeah.
And so we create these great companies, but we don't scale them and retain them in BC. And so the best talent and that capital and those ideas leave. So it's all those kinds of things that are completely silent in this budget in large measure around the demonstrable actions that need to take place to rectify it.
Reading, for the fifth straight year, in your organization's view, the BC government has failed to act on the promise to address the competitive handicaps imposed on BC's energy-intensive, trade-exposed industries due to the design of our province's carbon pricing system. Climate change, what's the story?
Well, you know, it's a bit ironic. We did work with the province over 3 years to really look at proprietary data, global data, and others, and said, look, what do we sell to the world that they want to buy? And we are exceptional at natural resources, manufacturing, and energy. We do it well. And so what we were able to agree to is that the things we sell to the world, forest products, minerals, aluminum, and energy, on average, is half the GHG intensity of competing jurisdictions' projects. So GHGs cause climate change. So if you're buying an electric vehicle, you want copper from British Columbia because it's half the GHG intensity of copper from Australia and other markets around the world.
Yeah.
Yet we're the only place in the world, the only place in the world, that doesn't back out the carbon tax for products that get sold internationally. So when you think about it, you know, the global price for forest products or for copper gets set by international markets. So some companies in BC spend $50 to $100 million a year in the carbon tax, and it means they've got $50 to $100 million a year less to invest in their people, to invest in technology, to invest in their upgrading their facilities. And what it means is, back to that GDP per capita number, is that we get less productive. So over time, you get something called carbon leakage. So the capital goes to the places where it's easier to put in place. It doesn't take 12 years to get a permit to build out electrified resources to electrify your facility, or it doesn't take 4 years to be able to onboard new technology on carbon capture and sequestration. So those things matter. And the problem is that the government identifies it as a problem, but we're the only place in Canada and the only place in the world that hasn't addressed that handicap that BC's energy intensive trade-exposed industries face. And you know why it matters? 80% of our exports come from natural resources, manufacturing, and from energy.
Yeah.
And as I said, we're good at it. And that's the transition that's going to enable us to get to a net zero economy.
Good.
Those companies are investing in new technologies, clean technologies, and building up new companies in British Columbia. But if they can't invest here, they're investing elsewhere, and those companies and the ideas will go with them.
Greg Davignon, CEO, President, Business Council of BC. It is crucial as we claw our way out of this hole that unfortunately we find ourselves in at the end of COVID-19 that we give our businesses every edge they can get to reestablish our market position in the global economy. Any final thoughts for now?
Well, just, I mean, BC is blessed with resources and talent and geography that the world would die for. A good example is right now we've got a conflict in Ukraine where Russia's using natural gas as leverage against Europe. BC has the cleanest natural gas in North America and among the cleanest in the world. We should be in solving Europe's problems and also providing natural gas in the transition to hydrogen to solve Asia's problems. But we're thinking too small and we're thinking too parochially. But I just implore the government and working with business and communities to start to work collaboratively like we did to repair the Coquihalla in record time. When we've got common purpose, working at speed to get an outcome, we are exceptional. Let's use that same strategy on our economy to build a more inclusive, innovative, and frankly, competitive economy for our kids and our grandkids.
Greg Davignon, pleasure to have you on as always. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
All right. Have a great day. Bye now. There we go, folks. And by the way, I absolutely acknowledge that our businesses, they are really hurting. Is it the COVID-19 restrictions and COVID-19 that led to all that? Of course it was. We need to rebuild them. The state imposed the limits, the red tape, the protections. The state also needs to do what it takes to make sure that our businesses are back on the footing they need to be. That's the other side of this, and it always has been. I've never supported one without the other. I need to make that clear as well. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to go back to open lines. I actually have a clear board. You want to call in and yell at me, you can, 250-386-161. I'm going to post some text messages that I got all at once. Like, I got these text messages literally within a couple of seconds. The screen went boom, boom, boom. They were all there from three different people and three very different takes on what I have been saying on this program. They are representative of the diversity of views that I am hearing as we talk about this issue about the convoys and of COVID-19. And I want one side of the spectrum to be able to read what the other side is saying. I want everybody to see each other because I think a lot of folks are convinced via, you know, we call it an echo chamber when you only surround yourself with people you agree with, that your views are everybody's views. And they're not. I'm seeing a wide diversity of opinions in terms of what's happening here with the mandates, with COVID, as well as even the state of emergency. So I'm going to post these three. I'm going to read them to you as well. You don't need Twitter to experience what I'm going to read to you after this commercial break. But I'm going to put up a screenshot, and, you know, I block out the numbers so nobody has to worry about anybody figuring out who they are, just so you see what I see to help you better understand. And I'll post that on social media during this commercial break.
It's Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right. You know, if all of you could see each other, I think it would be so much more beneficial because it's possible in the age of COVID for us to think that we're part of a chorus of voices that spans the entire country and really we're not. Or alternatively, it's possible to think that we're totally alone. We're the only person who thinks something. Everybody else is against us when in fact you actually are the silent majority. And it's tough to tell what's what. So at 10:25 a.m., it's now 10:50. So this was just a few moments ago, not long ago, right before we took a break for the 10:30 news. I received three texts back to back. And this is a pretty good cross section of what I see people responding to, exactly the same content. You're all listening to the same show. You're all aware of the same facts. This is the diversity I get. The first one I got says, "Your show has become unbearable to listen to. It's such a shame. The authoritarianism, disgusting, divisive rhetoric, the overt political rhetoric, you've been wrong time and time again, lied time and time again. I really don't understand why anyone would listen to this nonsense anymore. I think your loyal audience is actually worse off in terms of understanding what's going on because they listen to you." That's one side of the spectrum. And there's somebody in the spectrum else saying, "I cannot believe you cannot grasp the actual problem. It makes a very intelligent caller cry." Talking about Dawn. It's not about the virus. It's not about the mandates. It's about the, and it's a swear word, so I can't say it on the air, but I have posted the screenshot to the internet because content rules are different there. CRTC doesn't mandate that we avoid swear words on the internet, but it's the SHI, you know what, federal leader, Trudeau. All right. And I'm not saying that the government played no part in this. I haven't said that. So if you've heard that, please don't take that meaning. It was dominoes and they all fell against each other. But the convoy triggered it all. And I just wish it hadn't, because we knew how Trudeau was going to react, because that's how he always reacts. He's the government. Anyway, and here's the last one that I got. These were all at the same time, literally within a second. It says, Adam, I was once on the fence for months about getting my vaccinations. Even though I have diabetes and immune issues, I just didn't want a therapy that I was convinced I didn't need. Texter writes, after listening to your show for a few weeks, your argument finally won me over. I got my second shot at the end of December. Skip ahead to February the 6th. I end up in emergency with a diabetic issue. Texter writes, I was out in 24 hours, but I picked up COVID in the hospital. It was mild and it was over quick. Long story short, the texter writes, my doctor just told me this morning that if I was unvaccinated, given my medical history, I would have probably ended up in the ICU and I could have died. Texter writes, thanks, man. Your voice might have saved my life. That's the situation that I'm faced with every day. I'm faced with folks that yell at me and say they hate me and say that I'm hurting this community because they don't like what I tell them about the disease that threatens us all. Because it's scary to think that there's a disease out there that could do this kind of stuff. It's scary. It's easier to blame it on the government because at least the government you can intimidate and you can reason with. The virus, you can't reason with at all. It just is. It's a molecular machine. It doesn't care about morality or reason or appeals to anything. You can't shame it. You can't scold it. It just is. It's more comfortable to blame the government because the government is human beings that we can reason with and appeal to. It's kind of like the stages of grief. One of them is bargaining. You can't bargain with reality, but we do as human beings. We try to bargain with circumstance as if it is a human being. We put a human face on that which is inhuman or simply a natural process. But that's what I see every day. I see people who are being saved, who recognize what's happening, saying, Adam, if you hadn't have done this, I just want you to know that I could have died. And I see people talking about I'm this horrible influence that makes the world worse. And it's at the same time, all of you are speaking at once and you all think you're the only ones, but you're not. Texter got the vaccine. I'm glad that I was able to help you see what was always there. Like, it's not about me. It's not about winning. It's not about, you know, I persuaded people. No, it's about this. The truth was there. It's just it got a little covered up because there were some folks that got all hot and bothered and they worried about things. And, you know, I think it might have been Russia too. Like, in hindsight, I really do think we were the target of a massive misinformation campaign, like years long, to get folks this scared and this worked up. But anyway, so those of you who think that I'm just off the deep end, it's because you're not seeing the other side. And if you saw that other side every single day, you would better understand what's actually happening. So I thank everybody for their feedback, good or bad. I just want you to know that there is a broad cross-section out there. It's by no means tipped to the side of the convoy. In fact, it's mostly the opposite in terms of what I'm seeing. All right, let's go to Amanda. Hey, Amanda, you're on the air. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing good, thanks. I just wanted to talk about the travel that's opening up.
Mm-hmm.
They have loosened the restrictions on that as far as saying that they're not recommending travel at this time. So they've lifted that. I do understand that the vaccine is still, proof of vaccine is still required. But my issue is the price that BC is charging for the rapid antigen test for travel. It is criminal.
Now, I know the PCR test was really expensive, but it's the rapid one is expensive as well?
It is in BC. I can pick it up at Costco, Alberta, for $17 plus tax, $16.99 plus taxes.
Okay, yeah.
I can pick it up at Shoppers Drug Mart for $40. Ontario's the same. Shoppers Drug Mart, $40. The cheapest I could find in Victoria, $130. And
what?
It goes up from there. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's highway robbery.
It's unbelievable.
I didn't know that. Why is it like that?
I have no idea. And I went on the BC website because you can only go to a few places, and they're private clinics. They're not drugstores. You can't get a travel one at a drugstore because you need the documentation. So the cheapest I could find in BC is a clinic right in YVR. Sorry for those folks out there at Vancouver International Airport. And they charge $79 plus taxes, so it's about $85. That's the cheapest. Oh. You know what our airport charges?
What?
$340.
Oh, that's, you know, I did know that one for the PCR test. It's really expensive.
No, that's rapid.
That's rapid?
Yeah. Oh. I would love some media to, like, ask the powers that be why they are ripping the province of BC residents off. Like, that is criminal.
I don't know how to explain that. That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Somebody text me and tell me why that's happening, because I don't understand it either. I think Amanda's got a point.
Take a look on the province's website for travel vaccine, or sorry, proof of vaccination. Okay. And I know into Mexico you don't need to have any proof, but into the States you still need the antigen test. And it's just, like, I don't know how they're justifying it. And I would love the media to figure that one out, because it's a real shame that they're punishing us that way when it's next to nothing to get. I mean, when they're offering it at Costco, that's the cheapest I saw in Alberta, because I have family traveling from there with me, and they can pick it up for $16.99 plus one tax.
Amanda, that's something we're going to look into, all right?
Would you please? Thank
Absolutely.
You so much.
All right. Yeah. All right. You have a great day. And yeah, like, just because COVID measures are in place, I'm not going to blindly support all of them. If we're charging like an arm and a leg, if you pardon the use of that term, for a test, and we can get it cheaper elsewhere, absolutely I'm going to ask, why aren't we? That's important. I got 2 minutes left, Bill, if you want them. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning. Just something quick, Adam. I just want to let people know I'm a boomer, and though they have or have not heard of Pat Burns in Vancouver Radio and CJOR when I was young, you are emanating him, and he was all in the same fight, the same, what I'm looking for, conflict, constantly. And he did exactly what you did. And an advantage he had is he didn't have somebody keep coming down on you because you admitted about depression. He just said, this is the way it is, this is the way it should be, and that's the way I'm going to do this radio show. And if you don't like it, don't call. I just wanted to put that in there. Say thank you for everything you've done, and I'm a constant listener.
Bill, thank you. I do this every day because I know that you and me and all these other folks out there, we're not on the extreme on either side. We're just, we want to be reasonable. We want to be tough sometimes, but it doesn't mean that we need to be it all the time. So thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. You have a great day. You take care. 250-386-1161. A texter at 10:52 texted in and said, was the first one Kevin? He seems grumpy today with that text. No, texter, it was not Kevin. I recognize the phone numbers after a while. It's someone who's been pretty critical of me, and that's fine. Kevin actually texted 1 minute later saying, we're not worthy. Adam, you're the only one. Whatever. I think it's healthy that people realize what the broad cross spectrum of public opinion is. And that's as succinctly as I can put it. And I think that because of all this stuff that's been on the internet lately, the pro-convoy side has been convinced that it is the vast, vast, vast majority of Canadians. And that's just not what I've seen. It's not what I see locally. It's not what I see nationally. It's not what I see here. Yeah, it's a significant group, yes, but it's not the majority. It's not even close. It's just really convinced that it is. And I don't know how to broach that, because it's almost insulting for somebody who thinks that they're the majority to be told that they're not, but they're not. Like, it's just, it's not real. It's not from what I can see. Anyway, quick break. Back after this.